got what I've got.
Love only exists on TVs and telenovelas. Father Christmas is fat and white, so how come Papa Bronya is fat and skinny? Everything in Ghana is a disappointment. I pop out at birth and I'm already pissing somebody off. The nurse is disappointed in her salary and the fact that the doctor wants to sleep with her. How is that my problem? I've been seeing blood for 9 months and just won the Amazing Race of sperm. The least you can do is smile. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is the beginning of a disappointed journey of a Ghanaian child. They give you a phone with no SIM card and a screen as a sticker. How am I to call my dietitian and explain to her I'm getting formula instead of breast milk? I opted for sandals after failed attempts by my mother to buy me Nike sneakers. All she kept finding in the market was sneaker. Disappointment in my daily wage as a class 3 student sparked my entrepreneurial interest. I started selling my snack for money in order to live like a king. But how do you live like a king when you come home to Dumso? We improvised our childhood. Water guns tend to catapults. Milo and Ideal milk tins tend to branded soccer pitches and Ghana's version of baseball and cricket. Chaskele, the best kids game in the world, hands down. Truth or Dare was a game boys played with girls when they were teenagers. When I was young, it was a dangerous game I played with my mother when I did something wrong. Tell the truth, and if you dare not, you had the option of being kissed with a slap or lashed with a cane or belt. The choice, unfortunately, was your mother's. In my case, whether I told the truth or not, I still got beaten. How that helped me gain honesty is something I'm still figuring out. Like that AdMat question 6 said that I never got around to answering. That trotros are a disappointment. Taxis are a disappointment. ECG is 50-50. On a normal day, yes, they are a disappointment. But when you go and visit your girlfriend in the night and the lights go out, hey, they are not a disappointment. You may brand me a pessimist, but Ghana surrounds you with so much disappointment that you're forced to do one of two things: rebel or comply. Most of us comply with phrases such as God day, how you go do am. Few of us rebel. Some rebel by doing 419, stealing, or corruption. And others like Nkrumah, Yaa Santoa, the Big Six, and Anas fight and rebel for what they believe in. You see, rebelling makes you, disappointment makes you stronger and forces you to be innovative. You see, disappointment with TV brought about cable, you could say DSTV or Quest Free Sports. Disappointment with hip-hop not being in our local language brought about hip life. Disappointment with waiting for fufu to be pounded brought about neat fufu. Disappointment with payment, lack of payment options brought about mobile money. Disappointment with text messages brought about WhatsApp. Disappointment with trotros and taxis brought about Uber. Disappointment with weave on and Brazilian hair gave us Afro dreadlocks and natural hair. Disappointment in the economy gave us pa pa pa. And if after all this you are still disappointed, my friend, shut up and eat jollof. Not any jollof, Ghana jollof. For in Ghana jollof, there's no disappointment.
Well, hello, it is that time of the week again, and this is your favorite program, the Nyamiye Podcast Show. And as always, I am John Nyamiye Dazi, or you can call me Nyamiye Sky. On this episode, we will be talking more poetry, the reason for the intro. Poetry, a work of art with thoughts and rhymes. Poetry, the ink of society flowing through its thoughts and penned in love and wisdom, relating to hearts and creating fandoms. I actually refer to poetry as an encrypted daily diary of the world, teaching us and sometimes making our heads swell. In view of this, I would be telling you more about a man we all admired, one of the famous Ghanaian writer and poet, Mr. George Kofi Nyedevu Awuno Williams, popularly known as Mr. Kofi Awuno. And on another segment I call Q&A with the Diaspora, I have a friend who will be telling us about her experience living in China. I decided to ask her this question: are the Chinese racist? And you'll be shocked the answer she gave. And on the last episode, I think I spoke about a particular referendum that would have taken place on the 17th of December in Ghana, but it has been called off, and we will be listening to the president for the reason of its abortion. This is the Nyamiye Podcast Show. Okay, let's get right to it. I said we'll be talking about poetry today, so let's get to it. Let's talk a little bit history. Poetry predates written texts. Poetry started way back using oral tradition, and songs made in repetitions so that it will be easily remembered. Poetry actually started way back before we started writing. So poetry is quite old. It's an old art form that was used to prolong or teach traditions to younger generations in the form of music, songs, and rhymes. So poetry has been around for quite a long time. But moving on, let me tell you how I fell in love with poetry, or how I became a poet. On weekdays, I pick my siblings from school, and on my way to the school, I sometimes talk to myself, and I say these things that actually rhyme, and I'll be talking and those sort of things. And when I decided, if this is good, let me start writing them down. So at first I thought they were raps, you know, I thought the talent was rap, but later on I got to know that it was poetry, because I couldn't put them to beats. The timing was some way, and how I wanted the message to go. If it was to be rap, then it wouldn't sound well. So I got to know it was poetry. So that is when it started. It all started for me. I started reading poems. I joined the poemhunter.com family. I started writing my poems. Got real good remarks and comments under my poems, some of my poems. So yeah, that is when I started writing poems. So let's talk about this great man who contributed immensely to that art form in Ghana. His name is Mr. Kofi Awuno. Born George Nedevu Awuno Williams. Popularly known as Mr. Professor Kofi Awuno. He did a little bit of teaching in the University of Lagos, teaching African arts. He also wrote a lot of books and poems. One of his poems were Rediscovery in America. He did a lot of good for the community, or for the poetic society, or the poetic fraternity, if I must say. Awuno stood firmly for the African identity and its portrayal, and he demonstrated his through his literary works, where he used oral literature and tradition and mixed his native language into his works. Awuno also believed that every human being should represent themselves as a true product of their immediate society. Having attended Achimota, Awuno traveled for further studies in the United States and returned to serve his country. Awuno became Ghana's ambassador to Brazil in 1984 and to Cuba in 1988, and was Ghana's permanent representative to the United Nations before becoming the chairman of the main advisory body to the president of Ghana from 2009 to 2013. However, in 1975, Awuno was arrested after he was accused of attempting to overthrow the military government, but was released a year later. After his incarceration, he wrote mainly nonfiction. Since his passing in the dreadful incident in Kenya, many have continued to celebrate him for his dedication to the literary and political scene in Ghana and beyond. He is also remembered for being one of Africa's greatest voices who ever lived. He had some of these quotes that I want to share with you. Find your own sweet spot. Take your talent and enjoy them. Share them, expand them. Another one is, in our beginnings lies our journey's end. That was quite deep. Actually, when he was alive, I really wasn't into poetry at that time, so I didn't follow him that much. He was into politics, which at that time I didn't support and all those stuff. So yeah, but I think after reading his works and a little bit about his life, I think he supported Africa, and that was the main goal for us all. My people, I've been somewhere. If I turn here, the rain beats me. If I turn there, the sun burns me. The firewood of this world is for only those who can take heart. This is why not all can gather it. From his poems, Songs of Sorrow. And the last one I would want to share with you, the last quote I want to share with you is, you showed your dirty face first in Detroit, slandered me. In your ugly missionary voice, if the season were right, I would have broken your bones across my knees. I heard you have taken to playing an accordion in the Washington night, scaring foreign diplomats. With your horror show, you joined the revolutionaries of Kenya, only to betray them for multicolored blankets and a battered copy of the Pilgrim's Progress. A Unos third volume of poetry, Ride Me Memory, 1973. You have to check that one out. It's quite good. So, yeah, that's it. I told you we'll be talking about one great man who contributed immensely to the poetic fraternity, or the poetry form of arts, as poems. And he also wrote novels and other non-fictionary books. But this era also have seen great poets, not the orthodox kind of poets, but they are more into spoken word. Right now we have Poetry Asantua, Chief Moman, Agombela, Rhyme Sonny, and the poetic prince, and loads of other artists who are trying to push the art form to a stage where we can say it's an earning art form. Most of the times we say poems or poetry can't afford you the living you want to live because poetry doesn't sell. But these guys are making it. They are playing shows. And so it'll get there. It's small, it'll get there. Poetry is a nice art form that transcends ages and generations. You can write a poem today and in 50 years time will still sound and teach every kid or every person in that generation everything he needs to know about this world. As I said earlier, poetry is an encrypted daily diary that teaches us about the world in my monologue or intro, I think. So yeah, that's it. That's all we would want to talk about poetry. This is the Odenyami podcast show. Moving on from that, let's do a little bit of politics. And on the last episode, we talked about, or I spoke to you about, a referendum that was supposed to happen on the 17th of December. But fortunately or unfortunately, it has been called off. Let's listen to the president as he explains why.
Fellow Ghanaians, good evening. I've come into your homes tonight on a matter of major importance for the nation and for me personally. It concerns the referendum of 17th December, whose purpose is to seek popular support for the repeal of Article 55(3) of the Constitution, a provision which currently bars political parties from involvement in district elections and local governance. On my arrival here in Jubilee House on 9th January 2017, nearly 3 years ago, I came with the firm conviction, emanating from the campaign and national discussions, that there was a national consensus for two important amendments to our governance system, which would enhance its effectiveness and accountability. One related to the possible reorganization of our regional governance structure, and the other to the potential involvement of political parties in local governance. I thought, and still think, that such reforms should be based on a broad national consensus. It was in furtherance of this and other matters that on Tuesday, 18th April 2017, a little over 4 months into my mandate, I held a meeting with my three predecessors, the first, second, and fourth presidents of the Fourth Republic, Their Excellencies Jerry John Rawlings, John Ajakum Kufuor, and John Dramani Mahama, at Jubilee House, to seek their views and counsel on these issues. I came away from that meeting with the view that there was consensus amongst us that the time had come for political parties to participate openly in district assembly elections and local governance. Indeed, amongst the leadership of Parliament and amongst members of Parliament on both sides, and amongst virtually all stakeholders who had been consulted, either by me or by the Minister for Local Government and Rural Development, the clear indications were that there was a broad national consensus for the repeal of Article 53. The attainment of a broad consensus, for me, on a matter as important as the amendment of an entrenched provision of the Constitution, is critical. I do not believe that such an amendment should be driven as a party matter. There has to be a clear national consensus and agreement amongst the populace that a particular entrenched provision no longer serves the interests of the people and thus has to be removed. In this case, it had been long apparent that political parties were in fact actively involved in district assembly elections, despite their apparently non-partisan nature. The time had come to strip the process of its hypocrisy and accept and work with the reality of party involvement. Just as there was a national consensus on the demand for the reorganization of our regional structure, which enabled the creation of 6 new regions, despite the stiff constitutional requirements, to proceed satisfactorily, there was every reason for me to believe that there was a consensus on this matter too. It is on this basis that I proceeded and subsequently instructed the Minister for Local Government and Rural Development to initiate the parliamentary process for the repeal of Article 55(3) of the Constitution. Fellow Ghanaians, It is the same electorate who vote to elect a president and members of parliament on a party political basis who are going to vote to elect their own MMDCEs on a party political basis. Far from it being divisive, elections have in fact been a unifying factor in the politics of the Fourth Republic. That is the reason why for the last 26 years, under the Constitution of the Fourth Republic, we have experienced the longest uninterrupted period of stable constitutional governance in our history, banishing the specter of instability that disfigured the early years of our nation's existence, and the benefits are still showing. It would also mean that freedom of association, which is one of the most fundamental freedoms in any democracy, would be given full expression in Ghanaian democracy. Regrettably, 2 weeks ago, the main opposition party, the National Democratic Congress, made what I can only describe as a U-turn and stated that it was no longer prepared to go along with the national consensus. They indicated further they will actively campaign for a no vote. Inasmuch as I still believe that there's enough support in the country for a yes vote to be successful on 17th December, I do not believe that this is the proper atmosphere in which an issue of such nature, i.e. the repeal of an entrenched provision of the Constitution, should be addressed in our country. Even after their U-turn, I undertook consultations across a broad range of opinion as to the way forward. The general result of these consultations was that the process of repeal should be put on hold for the time being to enable a durable national consensus to be forged on this matter. In these circumstances, I'm convinced that it will not serve the public interest to go ahead with the holding of the referendum on 17th December, even though I believe a strong campaign for a yes vote would have succeeded. This is not the kind of atmosphere in which the repeal of an entrenched provision of the Constitution should take place. Even though I'm unrepentant in my belief that party politics is good for our country, for it enhances accountability, I also think that on matters of such constitutional significance, there should be a broad national consensus behind the repeal of an entrenched provision of the Constitution. So, fellow Ghanaians, it is with deep regret that I've given instructions to the Minister for Local Government and Rural Development, who was spared at this process on behalf of government with commendable vigor and dynamism, to abort the process and see to the withdrawal of the bills for the amendment of the Constitution, both in respect of Article 2431 and Article 55(3). Nonetheless, I assure you, the good people of Ghana, that my government and I will continue to work for a broad national consensus on this issue. And should such a consensus be attained for the repeal of Article 55(3) of the Constitution and an agreement reached for political parties to participate in and sponsor candidates for election to district assemblies at any point during my tenure of office as President of the Republic, the matter will be brought again back to the front burner of our public discourse for the necessary action. May God bless us all in our homeland Ghana, and make her great and strong. I thank you for your attention, and do have a good evening.
Well, that's it from the big man himself. So moving on, I spoke to you about a new segment I've added to the show, which is Q&A with the Diaspora. This is where I send questions to Ghanaians living outside the country to tell us about their experiences they are having in those countries. So I sent these questions to a friend. Her name is Joelyn Masoyo. And I asked her lots of personal questions and questions relating to the country where she now resides. I asked her this one question. Are the Chinese racist? You quite find out how interesting that her answer was. Let's have a listen to the interview.
Hi, my name is Jolene Masoyo, and I hope you're having an awesome day. So today I'm going to take you through a little bit of my life outside Ghana, China to be specific. So I have here 10 questions that I'm going to answer. I'll be reading the questions out loud, then I'd answer them after reading. So the first one, let's get right into it. The first one is, tell us a bit about yourself and the community you were living in Ghana. So my name, as I already said, is Jolene Masoyo Angono, and I lived in Tema. So I'm a Tema girl. Yo, my Tema menace, what's up? So I'm 21 years of age, the first of three kids, and my mommy's pride. I know she's not going to say that, but I know. Okay, the second question. Tell us in which part of the world am I at the moment? Okay, so at the moment, I'm in China. I'm studying in China right now, and my major is international trade and economics. The third question, number three. How many years have you been in China, and have you ever been homesick? Have you made yourself some friends? Okay, so starting with how many years? I've been in China for 2 years, 2 months, yeah. And for the first 2 months I arrived in China, I can probably say I was homesick, like basically every single day I would cry myself to sleep, talk to my mom all the time. I spoke to my mom 5 hours a day during that first 2 months I arrived in Ghana, because I missed her. I missed my grandmother, my cousins, all of them. So I would literally like talk to everybody, like going in circles like that. Oh yeah. So I was homesick pretty much for just 2 months, and I'm the type of girl that I adapt to new environment very quickly, just within a snap of the finger. I can adapt real, real fast and quickly. And yes, I have made myself some friends, actually, quite a lot of friends. And most of them are my classmates, my mates, those I study with. I take the same course with. And some of them are not like actually my mates, but yeah, your friends. I've made myself some friends. Question four. How are you coping with the language, and have you had any awkward moment or story you want to share with us? So let me tell you something real quick. The moment you enroll in any university in China, one of the requirements is for you to study the language for a year. So when I arrived in China and I started schooling, I had to take the Chinese course for 3 semesters. So that is a year and a half, yeah. So the language, bruh, I eat it, I sleep it, you know? Oh yeah, I'm actually quite fluent in the language, so I speak the language quite well, and I'm able to communicate with the Chinese. And have you had any awkward moments? Yes, I have a story. This one, it was so awkward that, like, it was just too awkward. So there was this time I was going somewhere and I used the train. So I was in the train and then there was this old lady, right? There was this old lady, and at that time I had put braids. I had my hair braided in Rasta. So she comes and she's holding the hair and she starts to speak Chinese. She goes, Nimen zama bien nigo. How do you do this? How do you braid this hair? Then I'm like, oh yeah, like I have somebody braid it for me, and is it my real hair? Like she was touching it, looking into it. And sis, I was uncomfortable. She literally invaded my personal space, seriously. And it was so awkward. I just had like an awkward small plastered on my face. And from there, from my hair, she holds my hand and she starts to compare my skin color to hers. Then she's like, oh, you're a little darker and you're not the same. Like, your skin color isn't the same as mine. Then I'm like, yeah, because I'm not from around this part of the world. So it was quite awkward. Like, it was quite awkward. And it was, yeah, it was weird. But it was hilarious. Okay, forgive me. Let's continue. Are the Chinese racist? Okay. So this one, I'm actually going to talk really brief about it. I'm not going to go detail about that. So it depends on how you want to see it. It depends on which perspective you want to view this. Yeah, like you want to view this. Because personally, I have had experiences where I'm like, oh, these people are racist, these people are that, these people are that. But as time went on and I got used to the fact that some people haven't seen skin color like mine. They haven't, like, met anybody with a skin color like mine. So you expect them to react the way they are reacting. So for me, when I arrived here, I realized sometimes I sit in a bus or in the train and then there is like vacant seats right beside me, and some Chinese people would prefer to stand than sit beside you. Others would cover their noses and then, no, they don't want to sit beside you. And she, hey, ran, touch all. A whole lot of stuff. They say, oh, you're black. Which, of course, they are not lying. I'm black and proud. But they take it to a certain extent. But as time goes on, you get used to it. You're like, it's normal. You just... So to me personally, it depends. I would say it depends on what perspective you want to see this. But still, racism is racism. Yeah, so let's continue. The next question. How well do you relate to their youth, and are they just like us? So I kind of feel like their youth, I relate to them on quite... I mean, which youth doesn't? Because as youth, growing up, we have our fair share of experiences and all of that. So, like, relating to their youth, I would say youth across the world, we all have something in common, like, where you feel lonely, you feel you're not being accepted, you're antisocial, all of these kind of stuff. So, for their youth, it's basically, like, they are trained as kids. They are trained in a certain type of way that they are growing up in a very, very competitive surroundings. So they growing up, they are being built for competition. That is what I see, and that is what they are used as about. And yes, they are just like us. The way we feel like rejected, we get brokenhearted, exactly like any youth, exactly like that. So yeah. And yeah, so yeah, that is it. So the next question, how is your social life like, and do you enjoy it? Girl, since the only time I'd step out and be like, oh, today I want to feel pretty, I want to go out and chill and all that, are days that I set aside for myself to take like myself on dates. Yeah, I know. I take myself on dates, boo. That is self-love right there. Yeah, so their social life, just like in every part of the world, there are party people. There are people that like to go like have fun maybe 3 or 2 times in a week, and there are others that once a week, and there are others that go like once a month. For me personally, I do that once a month. I take myself on dates the last Friday of the month. That is something I do. So I enjoy my space. I enjoy the surrounding, the serenity I have developed for myself at this moment. So their social life, the way they live it, it's on them, it's how they live it, it's quite interesting. Yes, that is the word I was looking for. They have an interesting social life. And until you're close, like very, very close, you have a close-knitted relationship with a Chinese person, that is when you get to know them socially. You get to be like socially equal with them. Or else, anything you try to do, you'd be like, oh, am I doing it the right way? Did I do it right? Did I do it wrong? You know, all of this kind of stuff. So yes, I do enjoy the surrounding I have catered for myself, and I enjoy my serenity. I love it. The next question, how different is their education system? Okay, so the difference between their education system and Ghana's education system is that they are more practical based, right? Like they are focused on the practical aspects of education. It is much more concentrated practically than theoretically. There is a theoretical aspect, but they always want students to have a feel of how the actual thing is like. So unlike home, that unlike Ghana, that is home. It's actually home. Yeah, my home. Unlike home, that is a little bit, it's book-based. Let me just go for it. It's book-based. It's like read, like know this, memorize, all of that. It is actually the same here too. They are like, they are good at memorizing. But the educational system is much more concentrated on the practical side and on the theoretical side. How is their politics like? Chinese politics I really don't know a lot about their politics, but I know it's not democratic. You can't just stand up and say anything you want. And you can't just stand up and do demonstrations. No, you can't do that. So I actually don't know a lot, but all I know is it is a capitalist capitalist sorry, it's a capitalist-based politics. Yeah, that is how it is. It is not democratic. Or like Ghana, that is democratic. You can put your views out there. Is there anything Ghana can adopt from them politically or in the field of business? Chinese, I feel, are so good at creating. They are good at, and it's one thing they are known for, like they are known for quotes copying from others. I'm sorry if this offends anybody out there, but it's the truth. So they what I can say Ghana can adopt from them is the ability to be able to build, like to create. You get it? A Chinese person would like is ready to take risk, like is risk averse. They are ready to put their all into something. Then if it's breeds proper results, fine. If it doesn't, he tried. So that is one thing I have known, like I know about most Chinese people that I'm close to and I'm friends with. They are go-getters. Like I know like there are people that are go-getters in Ghana, but they've made it more like a habit, right? So in the field of business, yeah, they are also good. They are very, very excellent in business. So I think there's a lot Ghana can learn from China. And there's a lot China can also learn from Ghana. So yeah, there you have it. And the final question. Would you rather prefer being born a Ghanaian or a Chinese, since you have, in a way, experienced both worlds? Honestly. So look, I'm grateful. I am very, very grateful that I have been given this opportunity to experience another culture outside my culture. I am very, very grateful. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I don't get to choose what nationality I'm being born as. I don't get to choose what religion I'm being born into. I don't get to choose where, when. No, I don't get to choose any of this. So this question, I'd say, if I was born a Chinese, I would equally love my country the same way if I was born a Ghanaian. And I love my country so much, so, so much. So it doesn't matter what nationality you're born as. It is all about being able to be open and available to other cultures. How accepting are you to other cultures and all of that? So I'm actually grateful that I have been given this opportunity to experience both cultures. I am very, very grateful. So yeah, it doesn't matter what nationality you're being born as. I'm a Ghanaian and I love it. I love every single bit of it. Yeah. So yeah, this is the end of the Q&A. And the interview has come to an end. So I would like to send a quick shout out to my family. I thank you all so much for everything. My cousins, my auntie and all of that. My mom, my grandmom. What's up, buddies? How you doing? I thank you so much. And I also want to send a quick shout out to 3 Science 1 girls. Girls, how you doing? Obawa. So yeah, 3 Science 1 girls. What's up? What's popping? And I want to send a quick shout out to King. King, what's up? Hi, wherever you are, just know you're right here. Up here in my heart. So, and also, a quick one to Ella. Hi, Desi. How you doing? So, yeah. This is me, and this is how life is like out in Ghana. And thank you all for listening. So, I have been listening to the Nyamiye podcast show, and you should. It is full of entertainment, education. You get to learn a lot of things. And also, it is available on all podcast platforms. So, I urge you all to download and listen. So, once again, my name is Jolene, and talk to you later. Have a nice day.
All right, hope you found that interesting and educative as well. So, to end the show, I'd like to say shout outs to everyone listening, especially to Richard Chum for supporting me and all my friends. Before I leave you guys, this is a poem I wrote and hope you find it interesting. This is the Nyamiye podcast show, and I'm out. All Fago, all but none live forever, all but mine, my dear Eva. Ours might be true, or just my imagination of what might. All but the scars remain, all but joy and disdain. Forever shall men toil and slander, and muddy their dignity for a birthright. All but mine still stagger at bay, all but mine seldom live. How far gone are there are my quails? Perhaps I still fear the night. All but life, all but screams and strife. Never a pompous brute, never either a subtle light. All far gone, all but my wit and mischief. All far gone, as I set sail to the ocean's deep. Can you spy their dickens? They are all bloody, but I'm all far gone.